KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Carlos.
Berkeley.
Potrero Hill.
Bernal Heights.
Sharp Park.
Park Pacifica.
Vivo in Union City.
Coming up, a new kind of doula, a death doula, wants to give agency to people at the end of their lives.
When the person is actively dying, we should already have a pretty good sense of who they are, what they need, what they want, and we become their advocate.
Then an Oakland spoken word artist helps young writers become published poets.
Not necessarily get them to like teach them how to read or write poetry or anything like that, but more so to get them to understand that there's a world outside of what they may have been exposed to.
And we hear a Bay Area sound from Audiograph.
3, 2, 1, go!
What's that sound? Stay with us, Cross Currents is coming up. You've probably heard of a birth doula, someone whose job it is to coach mothers through childbirth. Well, our first story is about a different kind of doula, an end-of-life doula. Their role is to provide emotional support to dying people and their families. Reporter Annie Berman joined Mimi Burrows and her son Peter as they met with a death doula. In the process, she learned more about what it means to live and die well.
Throughout human history, we've always sat at the bedside of people who are dying. And when there isn't family or family is not able to do it, the community has always stepped in. I'm Zoe Francesca, and I'm an end-of-life doula. Today I'm going to go visit my client Mimi, who I love. I've been working with her for more than 2 years now. And I've seen her change over time, and it's been such an honor.
I have a pretty happy memory of life.
Some people are like that, and I think you're fortunate.
You think I'm fortunate?
I do.
Oh, I hope so.
An end-of-life doula supplements the work of hospice. We come in, hopefully months before the person is actively dying, get to know them a little bit, find out what are their fears, what are their obstacles, what are they concerned about, worried about, and we try to address those one by one over time. And then when the person is actively dying, we should already have a pretty good sense of who they are, what they need, what they want, and we become their advocate and we become their companion during that time, and we don't leave.
Where is he? Did Mac die?
He's up there or down there, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
He died, yeah.
He did die?
Yeah. He died 5 years ago.
Are you making this up?
No, I'm not making it up.
How did you know he died 5 years ago?
Because he's my dad.
He was your dad?
Yeah.
Mike Burrows was your dad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is dangerous. It is dangerous because I don't know whether he's pulling a fast one on me or I'm really being fed facts that...
No, it's true. It's just hard to keep, when you get to a certain point in life, I think it's hard to keep all the facts straight. And maybe it's not that important anymore.
Yeah, right.
I guess it's not that important anymore.
You remember the essential things that make you you. They're never going to go away.
When she had more memory and more functionality, she would tell me long stories. And it was my job to listen and to respond and to help her figure out why these particular stories had stayed with her for over 85 years.
About my memory is such a funny thing. When you have nothing to rely on in situations but memory, it can become so confused and so clotted and so...
Mm-hmm.
So... Let's drop it. No more.
It's been such an honor and such a pleasure to work with her. I've learned so much from her, as I do from each of my clients. She was in theater for decades. She then became a speech therapist and helped people overcome their fears of speaking and their difficulties with speaking, you know. So that's what she's carried into this final stage of her life.
Well, my life was not a tragedy. And whatever, I don't have any regrets about my life. And that's some kind of a good feeling. I don't have any regrets about Mike. And that's sort of a good feeling. And maybe memory and the lack of it or the loss of it is the kindest gift that God gives us, because it just becomes a little blurred.
Mm-hmm. And you softens the edges.
What?
It softens the edges.
It softens the edges, and it also...
I work with people who have dementia and memory loss who can't rationally know that they're dying or can't talk about it rationally. So we talk on a symbolic level, and we use music, poetry, art, and that's my specialty.
I'm going to play a song. Here's a beautiful song that we like to sing sometimes. Can I play it?
What is it?
It's called It Might As Well Be Spring.
It Might As Well Be Spring.
Yeah, here it is. Let's see if I can get it to play. One thing I love about my time with you is how many songs you teach me and how many plays you tell me about that I never knew before.
It's just like Mother said. I sit around and mope.
Does it sound familiar yet? This is just the intro. Here it comes.
I remember this song. I love it so.
It's easy to go through the day thinking of everything that's wrong and everything that's bad. And all the things that are coming up that are going to be hard or scary or difficult. And working with people who are dying has given me a complete opposite view of everyday life, where I just feel so appreciative, so aware, so grateful. It sounds corny, but it's really true.
Very.
I didn't know about State Fair till we met and you introduced me to it. You've introduced me to so many different plays and
directors. Yeah, well, I discovered them and I just loved it.
Yeah. There's a lot to love there.
Yeah.
Annie is a student at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. She reported a version of that story for their weekly show, Northgate Radio.
I'm as restless as a willow in a windstorm. I'm as jumpy as a puppet on a string. I'd say that I had spring fever, but I know it isn't spring. But I feel so gay in a melancholy way that it might as well be. It might as well be spring.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Poet and college professor Daniel B. Summerhill grew up in Oakland, and in high school, he began writing. Since then, Daniel's performed spoken word all over the world, and he's helped the next generation of Bay Area wordsmiths find their voices. He recently led a 10-week writing workshop for Black youth in Oakland. They explored what it means to be young and Black today, and a collection of their work from that class was published in the new book, Black Joy, an anthology of Black boy poems. Daniel sat down with KALW's Janae Darden to talk about it.
Straight out of Oakland, California, where we're sparking on you. Give a shout out to my partners in the darkest corners.
You're from Oakland. Where'd you grow up in Oakland?
Yeah, so pretty much half of my time was spent in East Oakland. The other half was in West Oakland.
So you're not one of those people that's like, it's all about East Oakland, it's all about West Oakland.
Yeah.
You've kind of been.
Yeah. you know, I feel like, so Tupac has his quote, and he says, you know, when I moved to Oakland, that's when I learned the game, right? And so for me, that was what East Oakland was. That's where I kind of got my footing, and I feel like that's where I grew the most, I observed the most, and I think that's where I kind of had my roots.
Is that where you found your sister's poetry?
It was actually in West Oakland.
Ah!
Yeah, because that happened in middle school. So when I was in eighth grade, I was 12, found her photo album of poetry. And she had poems about, like, wishing upon a 747, you know, thinking that, because, you know, in the hood, you don't see stars. Right.
You don't see stars.
And so, you know, wishing upon, and I thought that was just brilliant in terms of thinking about language and how you can kind of flip things, right? And so me finding that wasn't necessarily me finding my voice, but it was more so finding out that I was interested in poetry and I was interested in writing. So all through my freshman year of high school, I was just like in the grass during lunchtime writing poems, and my friends were like, yo, come play ball. What are you doing? I'm like, I gotta finish this poem.
What about when you were in high school? Who were some authors that you read that also inspired you?
You know, in high school, I didn't read much. The reason I didn't read much is because I didn't know that there were books that I liked. There was one book that actually my ninth grade English teacher gave me, and it was called The White Boy Shuffle by Paul Betty.
And
I love that book, still have it to this day. And it wasn't until like really the tail end of high school and really like my freshman year of college, undergraduate school, that I realized that there was a slew of books out there and that all you have to do is kind of find what works for you.
Tribe Called Quest, represent. When the mic is in my hand, I'm never hesitant. My favorite jam back in the day was Eric B for President.
How has hip hop influenced your work?
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to Tribe Called Quest, you know, hands down one of my favorite groups, but just artists, group of artists in general. But I think hip hop and particularly rap, what it did for me is it made me understand that language doesn't fit into a box, and language also can exist outside of like font and text. And so with that, you hear like Q-Tip spitting crazy different cadences, right? Or doing these like funky things with their rhymes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think about Pac and his storytelling, or Biggie and his storytelling, right? So just if you go down a list of just like any kind of rapper or any well-known cat in like the hip-hop game, you realize that like they're not sticking to one kind of delivery or one kind of cadence or one kind of content, right? And so what hip-hop did for me, and again particularly rap, it made me understand that there's like this slew of approaches to language, right? And so understanding that and then approaching the page with poetry, it's like you don't have to do things the same way that they've been done for hundreds of years. You don't have to do things like this Eurocentric kind of dominant canon that exists, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can do something completely different and wild and free, and that can also be poetry, and that can also be appreciated, and that can also be valid. I wasn't exposed to Shakespeare when I was in high school, and it also wasn't interesting to me in high school. You know, Midnight Marauders was my Shakespeare. You know, so
it's a great album,
right? And I think that as much as we're expected to kind of learn about Shakespeare and come to Shakespeare when, you know, as we progress through academia, I think that folks should also, it should work the other way, right? To where, like, folks should come to, like, some of the great, you know, kind of artists of the culture of African-American communities and other people of color, right?
So I'm going to transition to Black Joy, which was a series of writing workshops for young Black men in Oakland that you led, and it's now a published anthology. Talk about this project.
Yeah, what we have now is actually what we had talked about initially, which is really exciting to think about. But it was, you know, we talked about it being primarily for young Black boys, right? Ages, I think it was 13 to 19 or 13 to 18 or something like that. And I wanted to do that because, A, that particular group is not exposed to poetry like any other group. They also aren't, their literacy level for that group is lower than any other group, too, demographic group as well. And so what I wanted to do is really not necessarily get them to like teach them how to read or write poetry or anything like that, but more so to get them to understand that there's a world outside of what they may have been exposed to. The poetry was kind of secondary, honestly, to that. I think the poetry was a fruit of the labor of exposing them to different things. So yeah, so that journey from when they first started, I think when you all came and did the guest workshop, I think you guys asked them, you know, why are you guys here? What brought you here? And most of them were like, yo, my mom signed me up. So to go from that to my mom signed me up to at the end to where they have this published anthology and to see them sitting there signing books, right, copies of their books, and performing at the Black Joy Parade. And all of that is what made that experience so rich.
Was there a masculinity complex to overcome with the young men when teaching them poetry and just encouraging them to go deep inside?
Yes, because especially with Black men, there's a certain bravado that like they're expected to have, right? And so like anything, you often take on what is put upon you, right? And so I think that getting them to understand that like masculinity is complex, in that you can be emotional and transparent, and you can shed tears, and you can be happy and angry, and all of that doesn't take away from your masculinity, and being, you know, vulnerable doesn't take away from your masculinity. And in fact, in many ways, it makes you, it enhances your masculinity. It helps you see yourself, and again, access places that you may not have knew existed.
So how do you practice Black joy? This is the last question.
How do I practice Black joy?
Or how do you practice joy?
Yeah, yeah. For me, having joy and practicing Black joy is being authentically myself, no matter where I am. So that goes for when I begin a teaching appointment at Cal State University Monterey Bay. That also goes to if I go to a Tribe Called Quest concert. That goes to if I'm ordering, I don't know, a three-piece spicy at Popeyes, right? Like, all of that is incumbent in, like, who I am. And it's important to kind of recognize your authenticity in all the spaces that you exist in and not change or divvy from your joy depending on the space you're in. For me in particular, I think that Black joy is it's inevitably almost always resistance, because there's always forces that want you to not be joyful, especially about being Black. At the root, it doesn't have to be resistant, but in our current climate, in our current world, it's that, because there's, again, there's always something actively working to kind of suppress that joy. So anytime you smile, right, walking up the street and you're Black, that in itself is a revolution.
That was KLW's Janae Darden speaking with poet Daniel B. Summerhill. He's the editor of Black Joy, an anthology of Black boy poems, and he'll be performing live in Vallejo next month. All the details are at KLW.org.
Where the Black dream, brother? Where the Black dream, sister? Where the Black information? The so-called Black education? The Black journey is a mystery, with the Black fashion of history.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next up is Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. And for today's sound, we're going to Ocean Beach.
Three, two, one, go.
What is going on? Reporter Claire Stremple takes us to where the action is.
Well, so she and I met last day of May, just this year. And, well, she's been the darling of my life ever since.
Mark Del Rosario is not talking about his girlfriend or an adopted child. He's talking about his pet corgi, Einstein. They've traveled from Denver, Colorado, to San Francisco's Ocean Beach for CorgiCon 2017, a conference for corgi dogs and their owners.
Oh my God, they're amazing! Oh, look, how cute!
It's a sunny day at Ocean Beach, and there are all the usual suspects. Tourists and families strolling, volleyball hotties wearing t-shirts but no pants, and someone hairy doing yoga in the sand. But today, there are also about 1,000 corgis, brown, sausage-shaped dogs with tufty white hindquarters and perky ears. People come from all over the nation, not to mention the state, to connect with the corgi community. There aren't any seminars or classes at this conference, but there are events, like the Corgi Ninja Warrior Agility Course.
3, 2, 1, go!
It's a take on the American Ninja Warrior television series. Basically, corgis weave through cones, jump some bars, and run through a tunnel. Fans are pressed up to the course in a thick crowd. The spectators in the back are straining to catch glimpses of what sounds like a painfully cute competition. Karen Hom is one of the founders of CorgiCon.
You know, they're more agile than people think. I think that corgis like to put on a show, so they may stop in the middle of the course just to say, give a smile, but it's all in good fun.
What looks like 6-inch jumps are still high clearance for some corgis, and it's hard to be nimble around the cones when you're throwing doggy smiles to adoring fans. Some dogs skid out and roll a little off course. If you haven't seen a corgi, maybe their most defining feature is remarkably short legs.
Corgis have the biggest personalities tucked into such a small body.
Big personality, small body. Kind of like kids. Karen doesn't have any of those, but she does have an 8-year-old corgi.
Our fur kids are our kids.
Karen and the other two founders saw there was a huge corgi population in the Bay Area, so they got together and created this event.
We try not to let it grow too large.
CorgiCon has its own language.
So dwarfing is kind of that weird little face that they make. I usually call it the corgi stink eye.
Derp and frap may not mean much to the average person, but a corgi owner knows. Christina Iglesias is here with her husband, Brett, and Don Corgi Leone.
And frapping is frenetic, rapid, active play.
There's also sploot.
So corgis with their short legs, when they sit out, when they happen to lay down, their back legs normally stick out, just like little drumsticks. And so we call that splooting. Looks like they're flying.
Susan Long runs Queen's Best Stumpy Dog Rescue, where all the proceeds from CorgiCon are going this year. The name is a reference to England's Queen Elizabeth, who's owned more than 30 corgis since taking the throne. Susan says the derpy look...
Tongue hanging out, just pure joy and bliss splashed across the face.
Makes corgis social media darlings. But their popularity can make them vulnerable to unprepared owners. Queen's Best steps in when corgis get less than the royal treatment.
They're such energetic, high energy dogs, and they need a lot of exercise, they need a lot of training, and so it's sort of readjusting your lifestyle to accommodate another living being. And so it kind of prepares you for being responsible for another life.
Oh my God, those sunglasses.
Ellen Vang is holding a blanket over her new baby's face to shield him from the sun.
Yes, this is Omi, who's 5.5 months. He's gonna be a corgi lover too.
She's here with her husband and Yoshi, their corgi. Yoshi's wearing an orange backpack and white sunglasses. He's dressed up as an M&M, and lots of people stop to take pictures. He's used to the attention. Yoshi V the corgi has thousands of followers on Instagram.
Yes, he was our first baby. Now we had this one, now they're brofers. He's his brother, but he has fur.
A broad definition of family is what CorgiCon is all about. It's an excuse to spend time with the ones you love and make some new friends in the silly, earnest, short-legged corgi community. From San Francisco's Ocean Beach, I'm Claire Strempel for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Claire. And if you have got a suggestion of a place with a distinct sound you think would be good for us to profile, let us know. Send us an email at news@klw.org. And don't forget to subscribe to Cross Currents on your favorite podcast player to hear all our stories and all our audiographs whenever you want. This music is by the Darrell Green Quartet from Oakland. They're performing at Cafe Stritch in San Jose this Saturday night. Today's Cross Currents team includes Taylor Caldwell, Janae Darden, Ariella Markowitz, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Porfirio Rangel, M-Lock Swingin, Lisa Wang, and Eli Warchapter. Our engineers are Tariq Foda, Gabe Graben, and Kristen McCandless. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.